Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Ben. This is an interesting one today. I gotta ask, when you hear the word fudge, what do you think of?
Inferior chocolate.
There we go. Super producer Casey Pegram, what about you?
I like fudge, so I'm going to say it is not a superior chocolate per se, but you know, it's on equal footing with milk chocolate or dark chocolate or any of the other fine chocolate products that
are
available.
Agree to disagree, my friend.
I will say, like, I do have experiences of going to like Helen, Georgia, and like getting fudge there, and it's just too much. It's just too heavy, and you feel sick for like the rest of the day after you consume it. So moderation. But I like a little fudge now and then.
I guess my thing is, I'm Noel, by the way, I just don't know what it is. Like, is it, it's like, it's almost chocolate, it's almost caramel, it's bordering on cake. It's just, it occupies this liminal space of confections that I just can't quite wrap my head around.
Yeah.
That's my take on fudge. It's also a fun substitute word for a naughty word. I like that aspect of it.
It's funny. We were supposed to start recording about a half hour ago, but we ended up just shooting the breeze about multiple things, including the most famous use of fudge as a curse word, I think, was in The Christmas Story. And you're right. I like the phrase liminal space here because I like, maybe like you, Casey, I like many people associate fudge with stuff you would see in like a country store on a rural road trip next to the pepper jelly or whatever. And I think most of us associate fudge with chocolate, but it doesn't have to be, right? There's maple fudge. There's all kinds of fudge.
Isn't there like a 70s kind of a Southern rock band called Vanilla Fudge?
Oh, absolutely. There is. Anybody that saw the Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the climax of that movie is a Vanilla Fudge song.
No way.
What?
Oh, my gosh.
It's the Set Me Free, Why Don't You, Babe? That whole thing.
Of course.
It's somebody else's song, but it's their version.
I never knew that.
And if you go on YouTube and look up the live version, it is the most 70s thing you will ever see in your life. It's great.
I love it.
Well,
I love it.
We've got to stop the show for second because we have to check out Vanilla Fudge. I can't believe someone beat us to that name. We're gonna have to come up with something new for our band. But while we're exploring that, we have to tell you, I don't know about you guys, but I just found out that I didn't know anything about fudge, like the history of fudge, the actual origin story and the genesis of it. Fudge is, first off, much more recent invention than I had thought. I don't know about you guys. And secondly, as we're going to find today, fudge was, in its heyday, associated not with like rural country stores or Cracker Barrels or whatever, but it was associated instead with a bit of rebellion.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't realize it was such a relatively modern invention, too. I assumed it was like developed on the prairie by the pioneers, you know, or even earlier than that. It's just I just assumed fudge had always kind of been, you know, you'd churn your butter and you'd make your fudge. But that's not the case at all. Let's start with a little bit of etymology. Fudge, it wasn't the other way around. Fudge wasn't a word derived from the chocolate thing. It was the other way around. Fudge was a verb before it was a confection around the 17th century. It was something you would use to say, oh, I'm going to fudge that, you know, sort of cheat something to the left or to the right a little bit. Like maybe you've got some woodworking that you're doing. I don't know, just an example. And you need to fudge two pieces so they become flush. That's not a great example. Obviously, I'm not a carpenter. Ben, can you think of a better example of fudging something in the physical sense?
Yeah, I think the woodworking example is good. I think that, I don't know how accessible this is to our fellow listeners, but I think the three of us have all fudged a little something in production where we maybe don't have the ideal audio we want, but we're like, we can play with this a little bit. So we've been able to fudge around. You know, it's interesting because etymologists now think that fudge came from an older obsolete term, fadge, which sounds like fudge with a weird New England accent.
Yeah.
F-A-D-G, right?
Exactly. F-A-D-G-E with the silent E, which I still don't understand. One of the great mysteries of the English language, the silent E. But that's a story for another day. Yeah, the Oxford English Dictionary, there's an article on the invention of fudge on Chowhound, and they refer to that entry where it describes fudge or fadge as meaning to fit together or even the idea of something turning out well. The implication maybe being, despite less than ideal circumstances, but the implication is more than that it wasn't about a mistake exactly. But we also know that there is at least fudgend about the idea that someone was trying to make a batch of caramels, as I was saying earlier, like what is fudge? And they ended up with fudge because fudge contains sugar crystals. And that's actually something that kind of is a no-no in baking for the most part. You don't want there to be sugar crystals because that can give a grainy kind of texture. And fudge is sort of the exception to that rule. It's these microcrystals of sugar that give it that firm texture. And they're small enough so that they do melt in your mouth and they don't feel weird and sand-like on your tongue, but they melt so quickly that it has sort of a smooth consistency. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of my weirdness with fudge is the consistency. It doesn't act quite like chocolate because the crystals are there. It's a little bigger, so it has more of a, I don't know, gloopy kind of thing. I don't want to neg fudge for anybody,
no,
yeah.
It's got almost a paste-like consistency. For anyone familiar with the Middle Eastern North African food halva, which is a popular snack, it's like that. that might not be the best comparison, but you're spot on with the weird state and importance of the sugar crystals. So in a previous episode, we endeavored to clumsily teach you how to whistle. And guys, I listened back to that part. And It was worth it. It was pretty hilarious.
I made my kid listen to it. I held the phone up to her ear just during the mouth sounds part, and she just made the most offended face, but then she started laughing uncontrollably because it's I don't know, not to like talk about ourselves, but it is simultaneously disgusting and endearing.
You know, for that one, I think it's okay for us to talk about ourselves this way because we're not saying we did a good job. I think the fun part of that was the brilliant fact that none of the three of us pointed out that maybe we shouldn't try to explain how to put fingers in our mouths while we were doing it. but still, it's pretty hilarious. So now we're going to attempt to teach you the secret to cooking fudge. This is with help from the Exploratorium. So now that you've mastered that weird, problematic wolf whistle, it's time to begin your fudge career. Like Noel said, you want these crystals to form. Forget all the other stuff you hear about candy. This does not apply to fudge. but you want them to form at a certain time and a certain temperature. So if you want to avoid that gross kind of grainy fudge, it's not so much how you cook it as it is how you cool it. So you'll see a fudge recipe that will call for, just in general, call for heating all the ingredients to 234 degrees Fahrenheit. That's what's called the softball stage, where you can kind of mold it. And then you allow it to cool. Don't touch it. Allow it to cool to about 110 degrees Fahrenheit. And then when it hits 110, that's when you start stirring. And you keep stirring and stirring and stirring as the candy becomes thicker and thicker and thicker. And what's happening is, every time you stir, you're creating more crystal seeds, and right. you get lots and lots of tiny ones instead of the big ones. And I think that that goes to the texture you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, if you stir too much, you don't get the crystals at all, I guess, or there are so many of them that it doesn't give you the same consistency. Don't stir enough, it becomes grainy and unpleasant. So it really is. I mean, honestly, fudge making is kind of an art, you know. You have to really keep an eye on the temperature. It's not something that you can just go in and do without knowing what you're doing. So kudos to all the fudge stirs, the fudge, I don't know, what's a word for a fudge maker?
Fudge enthusiast.
I like it. But you're right, Casey. I do think about, like, you know, the little candy stores on the boardwalk in Savannah or in Helen, where you can get a free sample, you know, and you can see their whole assembly line for, like, making fudge and pralines or saltwater taffy and all that. That's definitely what I think of when I think of this treat.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
So, yeah, like chocolate caramels could be seen as being kind of the progenitor, is that the right word? Or the precursor, I guess, to fudge. And those have been around since the 1860s. We found a recipe in an 1870 cookbook from Maryland. Very, very similar process. So totally understand the notion that fudge was created by fudging this caramel recipe. Because if you end up with these crystals like we're talking about, which you would not want in a sticky, chewy kind of caramel, you would end up with a little bit more of a crumbly and substantial kind of, like we said, fudgy, really, for lack of, I mean, that's really, it's the best word for it because that's kind of what it is. There's really nothing else quite like it. And that's one theory behind it. Mm-hmm. But we really still aren't quite 100% sure of who truly invented the dessert. But what we do know is where it came from, which is a college, Vassar University, in 1892.
Or thereabouts. Yeah, be not confused, folks. Fudge is marketed in a dishonest way. Fudge is a food of the elite, okay? It's not, it wasn't a case where somebody was selling produce on the side of the road and accidentally also made fudge. No, this comes from a storied institution. Like you said, Noel, the earliest origin of it dates back to a document by one Emmeline Battersby Hartridge. She wrote a letter describing her encounter with fudge, but she says this happened while she was attending classes at Vassar in the 1880s, 1886, but she says there was already fudge in play. There was a store in Baltimore that was selling it for like 40 cents a pound. So we know it originated around that time, but we don't know exactly who invented it. For a long time, Hartridge was credited with inventing the substance fudge, but Vassar itself disagrees. They have an article in their encyclopedia called Vassar Myths and Legends that says, essentially, look, Emmeline Hartridge described fudge. That's the first known written account we have of fudge. But she, in her own letter, said that she got the instructions to make it from someone else.
Well, good on Vassar for trying to set the record straight and not just, you know, co-opting fudge for themselves, because we know that Vassar has a really interesting history when it comes to food. It was originally a women's college. Now it's a co-ed private school. That happened in 1969, pretty recently. It was founded in 1861 by Matthew Vassar. Very remarkable architecture. There's a pub on the campus called The Mug, for short, which is, the full name is Matthew's Mug, named after the owner and founder, who is a brewer. And Vassar, as many of you will know, is located in one of my favorite cities to say out loud in New York, Poughkeepsie. And it's fun to look at because it looks like it would be spelled Poughkeepsie, because it's P-O-U-G-H-K-E-E-P-S-I-E. But it's Poughkeepsie.
It's a good one. I'm a Sheboygan man myself, but that's just because of our recent episode. You know what? One day, forget it. One day, let's just do an episode, perhaps a listener mail episode, where we just read off weird place names. I don't know about you guys. It's always hilarious to me when we have someone write in and they're like, you know, that weird cacophonous agglomeration of consonants and vowels that you tried to pronounce is actually pronounced Papaloya. And you're like, no, there's not a P in there. Those are all G's. Anyway, proper names.
So there's another one in like Boston, for example, that's, you know, it looks Peabody, but they say it's Peabody.
Peabody.
Peabody. Mm-hmm. You know, who's to know unless you've heard it spoken or unless you grew up in that area. But, you know, also, our listeners are always super respectful when they correct us, and we appreciate that.
I want to do this before we move on. I don't know about you, Casey, or you, Noel, but being a nerd, I spent the vast majority of things I learn by reading, which doesn't help with pronunciation, right? So I want to give a shout out to the person who wrote to us on our, I think it was our Wolf Whistle episode, and said it's pronounced bosun, not boatswain. So we see you, we hear you. Thank you. It was all of us. Teamwork made the dream.
What? That? No, I don't accept that. I reject that. Someone made a horrible mistake.
They did, but I mean, what is a living language but a mixtape of horrible mistakes that we all accepted?
It's a boat job. It's a job that takes place on a boat. How can you take the boat out of this boat job?
It's weird. There are so many maritime traditions, you know what I mean? And boatswain is pronounced bosun. So there we have it, which I learned something. Anyway, speaking of learning, back to Poughkeepsie. So it's interesting because Vassar has this fascinating history with food, and it exists before fudge. We want to introduce you to one, Ellen Swallow Richards, class of 1870, widely acknowledged as America's first professional female chemist. Not the first female chemist, of course, just the first one who had the full-time job doing it. And one thing that she is known for today was a book she wrote called Food as a Factor in Student Life. This convinced the Boston School Committee to change its usual policies about diet. She was so ahead of her time. You know, even I think we've all, even in recent years, started to understand the link between nutrition and development, especially in kids, right? In elementary schools and middle schools. This goes on when you're in college. And she has a quote. She went to the Women's Congress at the 1893 Chicago's World Fair and raised an excellent point. I don't know. You want to do the honors?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's interesting, too, because we know that there's a history of college students eating like trash. You know, the idea of like ramen and you know, Kraft macaroni and cheese pervades to this day, because it's like a period where you don't really have a lot of money and you're kind of trying to like just make it on what you got. So definitely an argument that continues to be part of student life, right? And she was really ahead of the curve. So she says the following: a cow is worth to the state perhaps $100 a year, a trained mind $100,000 a year. A nation which so carefully feeds its cattle should take care of its young men and women with promising brains. In fact, the future of our nation may be said to depend on the feeding of the students now in the schools.
Yep. Yeah. And that's, I mean, she makes an excellent point, and you make an excellent point as well, Noel. The only thing that I am not with you on is that ramen is amazing. Cheap ramen. I want to thank my college days and my like my traveling hobo days, for lack of a better word, for teaching me how amazing ramen is. You put a little sesame oil in that bad boy, well, you get a soft-boiled egg.
Well, yeah, of course it tastes good, Ben. I love ramen, but the sodium content is like through the roof, and the noodles are deep fried, and, you know, it's just like there's really nothing of value in it unless you, you know, sex it up a little bit and add a little cabbage or a little vegetable or a soft-boiled egg, like you said. That is the beauty of ramen, though. It's very adaptable. But I don't think that kids in dorms are doing a whole lot of that.
That's true. Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's true. And you make a good point about nutrition. I just have to go to bat for it. Man, I miss going out to like a ramen place. But you're right. You're right.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car, I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental
part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And Richards has this interest in the science of nutrition. Right now, historians believe this is partially inspired by some classes she took with Vassar's professor of astronomy, Maria Mitchell. Maria Mitchell held weekly gatherings for her classes at her own apartment, which was inside the observatory. How cool is that? And students really looked forward to this time because they would have kind of a social visit, almost a salon, right? They would drink coffee, they would have, you know, cookies and snacks served, and then they would get to meet Professor Mitchell's friends, right? Her fellow intellectuals, who included quite prominent activists and forward thinkers like Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucy Stone Blackwell. This was a great opportunity for these kids. Mm-hmm. But there's a question. Were they there because they wanted to learn more about the suffrage movement and abolition and other progressive policies? Or were they there because Miss Mitchell's cookies were better fare than they could get normally?
Yeah, it's a good question. Vassar has all these great resources, like the encyclopedia we talked about, and a very intense archive that shows that Hannah Lyman, who's the college's first woman principal, really was into this Victorian idea that women are frail and delicate creatures and need to subsist only on biscuits and bland tea. I'm editorializing there a little bit, but the idea they didn't need any kind of robust flavors or anything, or any, you know, hearty food. They just needed, the word is bland nourishment that was in the archives. And in 1866, she wrote this letter to Vassar's president, and she complained that new students were getting too many packages from home with unhealthy foods and treats. And she wrote this: the short supply and improper selection of food during the first months had the effect of exalting eating into a prominent theme of conversation and of perpetuating a habit I had hoped measurably to eradicate. Love old letters. Of receiving boxes from home. So That's where she was coming from.
Boxes from home, by the way, is italicized. Exactly. So picture it as a curse word. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us who are in college now or are planning to go to college or have attended know that food has always been more than just nutrition, right? Food is conversation, breaking bread, not for nothing. Do some of the oldest works of literature talk about the importance of eating together? So these students, these kids, some of the best and brightest in the country, weren't content to sit around with the equivalent of just, I guess, the plain, non-spiced food. Like we all hear that stereotype nowadays about, you know, quote unquote, white people not spicing their food. Not only was this happening at Vassar, but they had like a perceived scientific basis for that. I don't know. Is that going too far? Like they explicitly say bland food and lack of spices.
They do say that. No question about it.
Okay. Okay. So they said that. We're not making that up. But anyway, in this fertile cultural soil, illicit fudge parties begin. So these kids, who again are brilliant, they say, look, if we can't get the kind of cool stuff we want, the kind of sweets we want or something, then we'll begin making them for ourselves. And this is very MacGyver, and it's as dangerous as that dryer we were talking about earlier off air. That's an Easter egg for just the three of us, I guess. They would take their gas lights that they used in their dorms at night, and they would use the gas from the gaslight, or they would use spirit lamps from the chemistry lab to heat up these confections, and they would like make fudge basically with the stuff they could find in their room or on campus.
Yeah, at great like physical peril to themselves and others. I mean, think about it. They're using these very dangerous like lab items in a dorm that could easily be, you know, what if they get into the throes of fudge ecstasy and they're like fudge drunk and then they knock over a Bunsen burner and the whole place goes up, you know? I'm just speculating here, but surely fudge drunkenness is a thing. But luckily, it didn't happen, but it was a controversial activity. These were considered illicit fudge parties.
Oh, no, 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 no. Hold the fudge. Hold the fudge phone. Casey just pointed something out off mic, but Casey, I feel like you have to be on air. We want to be transparent. You have admonished us, and quite correctly.
You know, it's one of those things where we're rounding the 30-minute mark, and the ending is nowhere in sight. So I think we all know what that means. I think it is a bifurcated podcast that we're doing right now.
And hey, not going to lie, that is perfectly serendipitous because all three of us, I think, are out on vacation next week. So, hey, you got to feed the content monster. And I think this one actually is worthy, much more so than I realized on the onset, that there's a lot of stuff wrapped up in fudge. Not literally, but just, you know, historically speaking.
Sometimes literally, though. I think that's a good point. Yeah, we have so much more fudge to get to. We have so much
fudge
more
to sling.
There we go. We have so much more fudge to unpack, to heat up. We have not yet begun to fudge.
It's true. So we are going to make this a two-parter. So please join us for the stunning conclusion to this fudge saga on the next episode of Ridiculous History. In the meantime, huge thanks to producer Casey Pegram, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, and of course, Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit.
Big old thanks to Gabe Luzier, who I will title as the Emperor of Fudge in a tangential Wallace Stevens reference. And big thanks, of course, as always, to our peer podcaster, Eves Jeffcoat. While you're waiting for part two of our continuing fudge extravaganza, why not check out her show, This Day in History? You can also continue the conversation with your favorite or least favorite fudge recipes on the internet with the best part of this show, your fellow listeners. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Check out Ridiculous Historians on Facebook. And pro tip, you can find us as individuals if you would like to send us your best worst fudge buns.
It's true. You can find me exclusively on Instagram, where I am at How Now Noel Brown.
And you can find me on Twitter, where I am at Ben Bullen, HSW. You can find me on Instagram, where I am at Ben Bullen. Who knows? Maybe I'll try this mashed potato fudge recipe I found and post the results.
Yeah. See you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.